This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. As the Omicron variant recedes, the declining number of states that still have COVID safety restrictions in place are moving to end them. Governor J.B. Pritzker joined several fellow blue state executives last week in announcing that Illinois' mask mandate would end in most public places at the end of the month. Businesses, cities, and other entities are free to maintain their mandates. Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot, for one, has not committed to following the state's lead. But Illinois is forging ahead, and that's despite a lot of people who are worried about the increased risks to their health. In a state ditching masks when transmission of the virus still ranges from moderate to substantial, that worry may be growing, but it's not new. For people living through the pandemic with disabilities, those who are immunocompromised, those who are elderly, relaxed restrictions and even vaxxed gatherings are luxuries they still cannot contemplate.
If you find yourself sweeping away the news of a COVID-related death because that person had underlying medical conditions, ask your doctor what your chart says about you. A lot of us are carrying extra weight. Half of us have high blood pressure. 45% have some kind of heart disease or vascular disease. 10% have diabetes. 11 million now have long COVID, 440,000 in Illinois. And about 5% are immunocompromised, including me. It doesn't matter whether people die with COVID or of COVID, if they die because of COVID. There's good reason to still want to protect yourself and others from COVID.
Those are the words of Dr. Emily Landon, speaking at a news conference last week when Governor Pritzker announced the end of Illinois' mask mandate. Dr. Landon is Executive Medical Director of Infection Prevention and Control at UChicago Medicine, and I happen to have her with us today. Dr. Landon, welcome to the 21st. Thank you for making time to be here.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Dr. Meena Raj, a PhD assistant professor in the Department of Kinesiology and Community Health at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Professor Raj, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you for having me.
And finally, Sarah Luderman reports on caregiving for the 19th News, which is a site that covers how gender, politics, and policy intersect. It's named for the constitutional amendment that legalized votes for women. Luderman is also a contributing editor at Radiolab. Sarah, from one numerically named news outlet to another, welcome to the 21st.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, we want to hear from you during our conversation today, especially if you are among that percentage of Illinoisans who are immunocompromised, who still are concerned about what COVID might do to you. 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us at 21st Show if you have a different perspective on it. If you're among some of the people, we'll read some text messages we got who think that we just need to move on regardless with society, trying to get back to some semblance of pre-2020 normal. 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. Sarah, I want to begin with you. As the caregiving reporter at the 19th, you've been covering the COVID experience of people with disabilities and those who have compromised immune systems. In one of your pieces for Slate, you wrote, "The disability community is not a monolith." Can you just talk about that and the varying, experiences that people have been having, for especially those who identify as disabled?
Yeah. So, in the disability community, there's this idea of what's called competing access needs. So, I know that a lot of the conversation around disability and COVID is very heavily focused around people who are immunocompromised and they're therefore at high risk. And that's really important. But there's also this other group of people who have intellectual disabilities or dementia who may not be able to tolerate wearing a mask. And so sometimes mask mandates can make those people more isolated than they already are. And then there are people that are both. That are both medically vulnerable and can't tolerate wearing a mask. And so those people are just in a completely impossible situation. I know there's a lot of conversation about moving on from COVID, but yeah, for the entire disability community and for seniors, COVID's still there and it's still a threat and it's still disrupting people's lives.
Definitely. Dr. Landon, at that news conference, we heard a little bit of tape there earlier, announcing the partial or mostly withdrawal of the mask mandate. You mentioned that you yourself are immune compromised, and talked about the way you and others will have to exist in the world. Can you talk about your experience in being a doctor in the pandemic?
Yeah, for sure. I have rheumatoid arthritis, and I take medicines that are, you know, often on commercials on TV that you see that make my immune system not attack my joints, but it also reduces my immune system's ability to be able to respond well to the vaccine. Now, in patients like me, we can often optimize their vaccine response by giving additional doses, by reducing medications at the time of those doses, by putting them on lists to receive the therapies that they may need if they do get COVID. But there are a lot of people who are even more medically vulnerable than I am. And as Sarah mentioned, there are a lot of people who are medically vulnerable that can't really take those precautions. And the ending of mask mandates for them is really a big change. It really makes things different for them. And I would absolutely encourage any business, any organization, and I consult for a lot of them, to really strongly consider whether or not they want to continue to provide some protection for a while to individuals that are vulnerable in their organization, their building, their space, and how they're going to accommodate those individuals. Just like we accommodate individuals with disabilities by providing ramps and by having lifts, you know, there's no reason why we shouldn't be providing some additional accommodations for individuals who are immunocompromised. My experience as a physician is that with the appropriate PPE, with good ventilation, and with some know-how and skill, I can safely care for patients with COVID, and I have done so throughout the pandemic. There's no reason why we can't make it safer for people. And that does include mask wearing by most of the public when cases are high. But when cases are low, we have to be creative and find solutions that are going to help to be protected despite their vulnerabilities and their disabilities.
Professor Raj, I want to bring you into the conversation. Your work is with family caregivers of older adults, many of whom have, you know, typical age-related illnesses, right? Cancer, dementia, diabetes. How has the pandemic complicated the efforts to try and keep those vulnerable people healthy?
Yeah, so in the U.S., we have over 40 million caregivers who are taking care of an older relative, and that's defined as someone age 50 or older. In the state of Illinois itself, in 2019, they found that half of voters age 40 or over were caregivers. So half of people age 40 or over are caregivers, many of whom are themselves immunocompromised. In my studies, I have caregivers with cancer caring for a spouse or an adult patient or an adult relative that has another health condition. And so the biggest thing that's come up with caregiving is more trade-offs. We already know that caregivers face a lot of social isolation, a lot of issues with social connectedness, just due to the demands of caregiving, you know, frequently even giving up employment for the sake of taking care of a relative. And COVID has been even more isolating for these groups of individuals. However, they've also had to take even more protections to protect not only themselves, but also so that they don't expose their relative to something else, you know, in the grocery store or at the doctor's office or in the school. So when we think about mask mandates and sort of how to change or modify or be creative about these policies, I think we have to realize that the number of people that it affects is actually much greater. It's the people who are immunocompromised, and it's also the people taking care of them.
Yeah. What is that? One sixth, one seventh or something like that of the American population, based on the numbers you said. Dr. Landon, let me ask you about, I listened to your entire remarks at that news conference last week, and I think it wouldn't take too much selective editing to make it sound like you were speaking at a news conference actually sort of opposing the end of the mask mandate, right? You sound very ambivalent about it, if I'm honest. Are you ambivalent about this shift in public policy?
Well, I think that there's a difference between there are different responsibilities at different levels of policymaking. And I think that the wide swath of deciding that every single business, every single indoor in the entire state of Illinois still has to wear masks all the time may not be, is it becomes, you get sort of less and less return on that effort that you're asking people to go through in terms of, you know, requiring that and following up on it and making sure it happens. You know, you get less in return when the cases come down. But that does not, it's sort of like I see it as handing off the baton to local areas, to regions, to individual organizations. Healthcare isn't getting rid of their masks anytime soon. Schools should not, they need to have a higher bar for safety. We need to see the reduction in the mask mandate, not as a now great, everybody can take their masks off, and instead see it as a we're no longer in the danger zone where every single person needs to wear a mask all the time indoors. And instead that we need to be more selective about the times when that's important and when it's not important. And I think that a lot of people make the mistake of seeing that they hate these mandates. They want them to go away. They see themselves as having no risk from COVID, which is probably not true for many of them. They have really underestimated the risk to themselves and to other people in many cases. And then they see the mandate as a terrible idea and they want to have the choice. But then when they're given the choice, they say, but the governor said I didn't need to wear my mask anymore. And that is not what taking the mask mandate away is. So I think the best way to put it is that I think masks allow us to do a lot of stuff that we otherwise couldn't do in the middle of a pandemic. And masks are really useful and really important in especially certain settings. And now we need to be more granular about when we're going to do it. And people are getting back that choice. It does not mean that the governor thinks or that I think or that anybody thinks that you never have to put on a mask again.
Yeah, I guess the analogy would be if the state were to stop requiring wearing seatbelts, probably still a good idea to keep wearing seatbelts when you're driving. Maybe not. Let me take a moment to reintroduce our conversation today. If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking about people who are often overlooked in the conversation about the pandemic and safety protocols, specifically people who have compromised immune systems, people with disabilities, those who are elderly. As the governor is ending the state mask mandate in most public settings, not schools, not on public transportation, which is still covered by federal rules. But as the mask mandate is going away in most places, a lot of people out there are worried about what that means for them. We're speaking about this with Dr. Emily Landon, who's Executive Medical Director of Infection Prevention and Control at UChicago Medicine, Professor Mina Raj from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign Department of Kinesiology and Community Health, and Sarah Luderman, who reports on caregiving for the 19th News and is also a contributing editor at Radiolab. We'd love to hear your perspective on this. 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Sarah, you've been covering this for a while now. How, as the pandemic has changed, public health guidance has changed, what are the current requests by people in the disabled community?
Well, I think a lot of people are in a very impossible situation. As I mentioned before, there are people who really need us to keep mask mandates. There are people who have had to really scale back their social contact because they aren't capable of wearing a mask consistently for disability reasons. And then you have folks that are both. I think the most recent piece that I wrote about this was for the 19th, and it was about school children specifically with disabilities, where you had kids that basically haven't been in a classroom in 2 years, but also who can't do remote learning because they're autistic and they need hands-on one-to-one support. Because I spoke to one family where their son is deafblind, and to quote his mother, like, you can't just put him in front of a PowerPoint. Like, he's not going to be able to experience that or learn very much.
No Zoom there.
So I think something that's sort of interesting right now is I think that a lot of disability leaders, because of these access needs, have a lot of different asks. I think I agree with Dr. Landon that really our approach needs to be, from what I've heard from experts, is that it needs to be more granular, a little bit more focused on specific needs. And I think there's also larger environmental changes that could be made, like better ventilation that don't rely on behavior and take the responsibility out of individual people's hands and sort of make it more of an environmental change. I think improving a lot of parents I've spoken with also are very interested in improving remote learning options for their immunocompromised children because their children missed a lot of school before the pandemic because it wasn't safe for them to go in during flu season or because they'd had a surgery recently. There's just a lot of longstanding structural problems that could be fixed. And I think focusing on just masks or no masks is really like oversimplifying and sort of putting the onus on people who are just like, it's putting all of the responsibility on everyday Americans to make the bulk of public health decisions, which I don't think is particularly effective.
Yeah. Professor Raj, that's an interesting way to think about this. I think I've heard a lot of complaints throughout the pandemic that a lot of sort of public health decision-making has been pushed further and further down to the individual level as opposed to the community level. Is that something you're seeing in your work?
I think so. I think policymaking is challenging. You're trying to fit a lot of people under one umbrella, and that doesn't always accommodate for the unique circumstances of different groups of individuals. So, I mean, even talking about mask mandates, something that I see a lot in my work is, for example, sandwich generation caregivers. These are family caregivers who have young children and also have an older relative. And so when decisions are kind of pushed at the individual level, that means some people have to make trade-offs that just aren't fair. They have to make trade-offs between staying home with their kids when their kids go to school without a mask or seeing their adult relative that they're a caregiver for. And so when we think about policymaking, it's really important to figure out how do we adapt the policies to different groups of people and different needs and circumstances, rather than assuming that people will change their behavior and continue to change their behavior. Sometimes I think about, what if there is another surge? Like, are people really going to start all of a sudden wearing masks all the time again? It's much harder to start pushing restrictions again once you've taken them away versus just kind of incrementally modifying.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, we're going to continue this conversation. We need to take a break here. 800-222-9455 is the number if you want to join us. 800-222-9455. You can tweet us at 21st Show. More to come in our conversation about the changing state pandemic requirements, getting rid of masks for one, and how that could affect people who have either immune compromised or disabilities. That's going to continue in just a moment. Stay with us. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the latest phase in the pandemic. The Omicron variant is receding. Illinois is joining a number of states that are ending their mask mandates. That's going to be for most public places at the end of the month. But what does that mean for people who either have disabilities, maybe they have compromised immune systems, or they're elderly and are more or continue to be more vulnerable to the pandemic as those around them are going to be relaxing their own sort of personal restrictions and not obligated to wear masks in a lot of public settings? We're speaking about that with Sarah Luderman, who reports on caregiving for the 19th News, which is a site that covers gender, politics, and policy. Also, Assistant Professor Meena Raj from the Department of Kinesiology and Community Health at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and Dr. Emily Landon, who is Executive Medical Director of Infection Prevention and Control at UChicago Medicine. You've often, if you've followed the governor and Dr. Ngozi Ezike, Public Health Director's news conferences, she has also been a voice at a number of those briefings in the past 2 years. I want to begin this next segment of our conversation with a clip of President Biden speaking in December.
For unvaccinated, we are looking at a winter of severe illness and death for unvaccinated, for themselves, their families, and the hospitals they'll soon overwhelm. But there's good news. If you're vaccinated, you have your booster shot, you're protected from severe illness and death.
Well, unfortunately, President Biden's prediction there or assessment of the situation proved to be fairly correct during the Omicron surge. But Dr. Landon, I want to ask you, because he did not sort of acknowledge the people for whom being vaccinated and having a booster shot is not necessarily enough protection. How does having a weakened immune system, being immunosuppressed, complicate that narrative that if you're vaxxed, you can pretty much stop worrying about COVID?
Yeah, fortunately, when it comes to airborne viruses and infections, there's no way for any one person to separate themselves out. We all share the same air. And people who can't protect themselves with a vaccine for whatever reason, either because they're too young to receive the vaccine, or if they're immunocompromised, or they've got a medical contraindication to receiving the vaccine, they didn't choose to be vulnerable. They didn't choose to be part of this winter of death and misery. You know, they wanted to do the right thing. They want to survive too. And I think sometimes we look at people like this and we think that, oh, they're sick anyway, you know, like sort of survival of the fittest. But like, these are the people that are in, like, working next to you at work. You don't know them. They appear pretty healthy. They're pretty normal. And I don't think that people like myself belong in the same category as people who just chose not to get the vaccine because they didn't want it. I mean, I think I don't want to die because I have rheumatoid arthritis. I should live the same normal length of life as everyone else. And I think asking other people to wear a mask, especially in certain settings and when cases are really high, is not too big of an ask to make. I mean, if we as a community and as a country are so jaded that we think that wearing a mask when we're in pharmacies, hospitals, in grocery stores, when the cases are high, if we think that that's too much of an ask for us in order to save someone's grandmother or someone with rheumatoid arthritis or someone with cancer or someone with a disability who can't wear a mask, I don't know what, like, we've done something really wrong. And that's not who we are. That's not who I learned we were as Americans. I know that there are some people who feel that way, but I'm not one of them. And I don't think that most people in America and most people in Illinois are that person. I think a lot of people have been confused to think that the only people who die of COVID are people who are super sick to begin with, and that if they get vaccinated and wear a mask, they'll be fine, even if everybody else isn't, which may or may not be true. And especially that's not true during surges. But it's also important to remember that when the cases come down and there are so few cases around that we're at the low, sort of low or moderate transmission, according to even the CDC's metrics, the likelihood of encountering someone with COVID is so low, and you move through a grocery store relatively quickly, that risk is low. And there are new medications out there to help people like me and people who get sick who are immunocompromised. And those are becoming more and more available. So that's why it's okay to get rid of the mask mandate now. But it's exactly why we're going to have to put something like the mask mandate back into place when there's another surge or a new variant that doesn't respond to those medicines, or that's sweeping through even vaccinated people. Everybody needs to take a moment, step back and say, if it were my kid or my mom or my best friend, would I feel differently about this, before they decide that they're going to sweep through school board meetings and say that they just don't care about people in this situation?
Yeah. Let me share a comment from a listener. We had a tweet from somebody who goes by the handle An Ordinary Dame, says, I worry about schools. Maybe the decision should be handled like peanut-free classrooms. Are there students and teachers with asthma or immune compromised members of their household? Masks on in that classroom. Sarah, I wanted to ask you kind of about that. I think it's well established in American society that disability access is a big thing for things like wheelchair ramps, right? Doors that open at the press of a button for people with physical disabilities to have access to those spaces. What about access that requires other people to take steps, like wearing a mask, maintaining distancing, things like that?
In terms of schools, I actually have been looking at how students with disabilities have been coping since March of 2020. I actually wrote an article for The Nation back then about sort of pushing back against this idea that children were somehow not at risk of serious impact from COVID. I think historically, people don't generally like hate people with disabilities or seniors. Like nobody goes like, grr, I really hope they die. That would be great. Like that's not a real opinion anybody has. But when you ask people to take the steps necessary to protect those people, they often rarely do. And it's a little frustrating to watch. Like a lot of times, so even at the personal level, you have people who just don't want to wear a mask. On the systemic level, you have schools that have been underfunding special education services for decades that aren't providing the free appropriate public education that they're technically legally obligated to provide every student. You have, I mean, honestly, even for stuff like wheelchairs, like you have buildings that don't add ramps because the ramp costs money. I mean, as soon as you ask a person or a business or even the government to make a change that is even mildly inconvenient, a lot of the time that change just doesn't happen. And it's just very frustrating.
I want to invite our listeners to join our conversation again at 800-222-9455. I also want to share a few texts. Ricardo wrote in to say, it's silly to think that the politicians can decide the science. Mandates are for the slow to understand that even one case around me is life-threatening. As for me and my family, we are not abandoning the mask. Another listener, Brandy, texted, I do not have a chronic illness, but my dad has COPD and less than 25 lung capacity total. I worry that with mask mandates lifting, it won't be safe for me to visit him as he battles his incurable disease. I will continue to wear a mask, but I can't control those around me, and I'm terrified to give him COVID and expedite his passing. And another listener, Kathy, said, I have almost every comorbidity from age to heart disease and many in between. I stay home mostly. I double mask when I must go out. Yeah, I'm lonely and angry at the spreaders of the disease and frustrated that I can't make it okay. I mourn the loss of my golden years to COVID. I mourn losing so much time with my grandchildren when there's so much to teach them. Professor Raj, vulnerable people are spending a lot of time apart from their families, often isolated. Can you talk about the toll that takes on mental health and in turn physical health? Do you think it's expediting sickness and death in those who are already sick or older?
Absolutely. So, I mean, we already know that the mental health effects of caregiving are extensive. So anxiety, depression, to name some of the few. The physical burden of caregiving, you know, helping someone move from one place to another and then sort of losing that functionality on one's own as a caregiver can also have mental health impacts. One of the listeners who texted mentioned feeling isolated and the worry about being even more isolated. And that we know has a tremendous effect on mental health. And this also actually impacts more than kind of the adult caregiver that we're thinking about. In a study that I did with over 1,000 youth age 14 to 24, we found that over a third of these young adults are actually caregivers for an adult relative, whether it's their parent or a grandparent. And so when we think about mental health effects on young adults as well, there's a huge impact there where they have to make decisions about whether to socialize with their friends and go through these typical transitional phases of their life, or to be able to continue taking care of their parent. So I think, yeah, there's a lot of mental health and also physical health effects that are kind of going back and forth with mental health.
Dr. Landon, we got another text from a listener who said, this is sort of a contrary view to the direction we've been going in this conversation, but said people need to get on with their lives. Masks and social distancing, lockdowns, and the vaccines are total expletive. The person then goes on to talk about ivermectin. I don't necessarily, if you want to respond to that, you can, but I just wonder, given that attitude is out there, maybe we can talk a little about EvuShield and some of the other, you know, advances that are out there for people who, you know, given that the predominance of that attitude, what those who still need to worry are going to be able to have to help them get their way in the world.
Yeah, I just want to say something about the mental health aspect of this that I think is affecting you. I mean, I can hear some mental health crisis in the argument that all this distancing and masking is expletive, right? That doesn't sound like somebody who's feeling really good about where they are in their lives right now. And I think the fact that this pandemic has broken so many of us mentally and physically is just really evident about how on the edge we were living in the what we called normal before this. You know, a lot of these things are problems that have been, as Sarah has been pointing out, and Mean has been, and Professor Raj has been pointing out, we have been neglecting some of these aspects of what makes us, you know, sort of inclusion and making us more whole and considering all the different people that live within our communities for a long time. And this is, you know, this is just sort of the straw that broke the camel's back. And I for one, don't want to go back to the place where we were nearly failing everybody. I would rather we move forward into a place where we can actually say, okay, so this did not withstand the stress test. We need to build this up. We need to make this better. We need to find a way to provide a little bit more care. Some other countries are able to do that, you know, and I think it comes down to trust in government is the major difference between our humans, the people that live in the United States, citizens, and people that live in other countries. In other countries, people trust their government and don't freak out about some of these requests. They trust that if they do them, they're going to be protecting the people around them. And here, we don't trust when we do them. We don't trust when we don't do them. We don't trust anything. And that is creating a lot more stress and anxiety. And I don't think that the solution is to just give up and trust people that you don't trust. I think we need to work on building that trust over time. And so, you know, that's my piece about that. And I will now shift gears to talk about Evusheld. There are medicines that are now available to help really medically vulnerable individuals survive infection that are not just vaccines. And that's a turning point that's really an important calculus in the idea of whether or not we should discontinue a mask mandate. And I think while those have been incredibly rare over the winter, they have been not available to everybody that needs them. They're becoming more available. We're getting further down our priority lists of giving out Evusheld, which is an injectable medicine that can help prevent COVID for people. It's an adoptive immunity therapy. And there are the monoclonal antibodies. We had very few of them that worked. And that was a real problem with why so many people suffered so badly with Omicron. And the new medications, Paxlovid and Molnupiravir, are both becoming more available every week. And that's also because we're needing less of them because fewer people are getting sick. And it's important to note there's more than 10 days before this mask mandate goes away. And 10 days is a real long time in Omicron. By the time we get there, things should be a lot better. But there are still some places, schools, hospitals. I think pharmacies are the ones that are really need to make the right choice here. They need to keep masks. Any place that has a pharmacy in it, that needs to be a place where people can go who are vulnerable. I think that there may be some other places that want to have hours for vulnerable people to shop where there's mask mandates in place for certain hours. Mm. There's a lot of ways that businesses can be creative to address this, to still provide access. There certainly were these hours for elderly and vulnerable individuals early in the beginning on, of the pandemic. Right. There's no reason why we couldn't do that now.
Dr. Emily Landon is with UChicago Medicine. We've also been speaking with Professor Mina Raj from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Sarah Luderman, who is caregiving reporter at the 19th News. Sarah, Dr. Landon, Professor Raj, thank you so much for being with us today to talk about this on the 21st. And that is all the time we have for our program today. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.